Fasten your chin strap and get ready for the snuff. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
You're listening to The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice. Yes, you heard it. We are brought to you by Mortgage Investors Group. It's the right home loan. And listen, the financial service sector represents a vital component of our nation's critical infrastructure, and Mortgage Investors Group takes its role very seriously. MIG is available for you and stands ready to serve your home financing needs. They are working closely with their title company partners, and they're making special provisions for safe and timely closings. Find out more about what they're doing right now and get the best advice right there from the right home loan company, Mortgage Investors Group. Again, MIGonline.com.
We'll get into some of the NFL player votes or the NFL owner votes, excuse me, as they expand to a 14-team playoff coming up in a little bit. Kirby Smart is adjusting his staff, Eric. But Brian Niedermeyer yesterday, as you sent me and I saw it just before that, he said this to recruits on Twitter, quote, asking all recruits, which one do you want? One, a daily generic graphic sent to 75-plus guys with your personal name slapped on the back of a jersey or a picture on a phone. Or, number two, a genuine talk with coaches about life and what their plan is to develop you. Leave a comment. What's more important, flash or substance?
I mean, I think the conversation starts with this. This is why Brian Niedermeyer Brian Niedermeyer is showing Vol Nation and everyone out there who has access to social media and anybody else, he's giving you a glimpse as to what our staff and how our staff recruits. Because those are the conversations that they're having with kids on the cell phone or on FaceTime or whatever. Like, that's the stuff that they're going with. They're going with substance. They're going with relationships. You heard Randy Sanders say it yesterday, Brian, when we talked to him, you know, why was Tennessee so successful back in the day, especially from a recruiting standpoint? And he said family. And that's why he thinks they're going to do so well right now. So yeah, I think it's pretty simple. That's kind of a duh answer, but so many kids get caught up in the flash and the ooh, ah, how many followers do I have? How many fan followers from that school did I get after going on an official visit? Ooh, cool. Look at me doing this picture and this pose, you know, flexing my tricep for this post, you know, for this Instagram post or for my profile pic. Guys that are really worried about all that, I would argue, are probably not the guys that you want. I mean, it's okay to also like that stuff, right? I mean, it's okay to think that's cool, especially now if you're a kid. Yeah. Nowadays, it's okay to think that's cool, but to put, you know, that in, you know, as taking precedence over the substance, that's, I mean, okay, you've been around Ralph and Karen forever. They've been a very successful national recruiting brand. I mean, they don't strike me as the social media picture, Twitter, Instagram, we're going to give you a cool picture to post. They kind of strike me as a substance recruiting duo, are they not?
Yeah. We'll tell you how you fit here and how you can help us and to develop a relationship and get to know you. Because I think, I honestly don't think the kids today, I feel like I'm 100 years old shaking my fist at it, but kids today don't know how to build relationships with anybody because everything takes place via text or over the phone or things like that. They don't know how to build relationships with people. And so when coaches try to build relationships with them, it doesn't click with every kid. And that's, I don't want to say that you want to just cast aside anybody that doesn't know how to build a relationship with you, but I think it's very difficult to develop the right kind of relationship with a kid that is going to benefit both of you if they come to your campus, because all they know is the flash, and they value a coach sending them photoshops of them in a uniform of that school more than somebody who wants to sit down and have a real conversation with them, because nobody's ever had a real conversation with them. Well, so they take it one of two ways when somebody does, either positive or they're uncomfortable with it.
I don't think anybody that's having success in recruiting is just doing one or the other. Like, you know, that can't be like a subtle shot at Florida or something, because Dan, that's not how anybody that's good at this. No school does it like that. They may also send out the recruiting stuff. You know, Pruitt, you know, remember there's videos that come out of him, you know, dancing with recruits. Remember there was that one of Saban doing what one of the popular dance moves at the time. I mean, you know, coaches do silly stuff and they give kids the opportunity to make those posts and get those pictures done. But the ones that are doing it right, like, you know, if what Pruitt says he means, which is we need to be competing with the schools in recruiting that we want to compete with on Saturday. And I would argue he has done that. He's been doing that, not for every single recruit, but I mean, there's kids that we get. I mean, we got a couple of them last year, a couple receivers at the very end of the class that Florida wanted bad, you know, different schools wanted. So if you're competing with the right schools on Saturday or in recruiting that you want to compete with on Saturday, then those schools are all doing this as well. So that's what makes this even more important. It's like, if you're just trying to put, you know, put some flash out there and that kind of stuff, that's one thing, but you have to be able to do this, what Niedermeyer's tweeting about, or you have no chance to recruit these kids. How can you convince a kid to come from the West Coast to Knoxville, Tennessee, when there's a lot of great schools there, and all the way, you know, on the way here, you're passing. I mean, I keep referring back to what we talked about yesterday, but, you know, Randy Sanders said it best yesterday too, when he said, there's a lot of schools with great tradition and great facilities and great stuff. So what separates all those things? And this dates back to even like when I was getting recruited, man, the conversations that I had with people here were better than the conversations I had with people other places. I mean, you could literally make it that simple. I'd love to say I just came here because of the size of the stadium, or I just came here because of the quality of the players on the roster. And those things mattered, you know, the Vol Walk experience where people knew who I was. And I was always just Danny Ainge's nephew or Doug Ainge's kid. I was never, you know, I wasn't Eric Ainge yet. And I was on the Vol Walk at 17. All those things matter. But it ultimately came down to, for me, a conversation with the head football coach, where he said, I'll guarantee you reps in training camp with the ones. We need quarterbacks. I'm going to give you a legitimate chance. And I was like, this seems like an honest dude who can make good on that. I mean, I was getting smoke blown from everybody else in recruiting. It was honest substance conversations with real people that ended up getting me here over the other stuff. And, you know, I'm glad to see that we get a little snippet of what this staff is doing, because when I see Niedermeyer tweet that, Brian, I kind of walk away from it. Like, you know, after we were talking yesterday and we were texting back and forth about it, yeah, I walked away from that going, man, it's nice to get a reminder that these guys know what they're doing. Yeah, you know, that's kind of where my takeaway from it. It's, you know, not necessarily the comments from the kids or anything like that. It's my ability to just kind of not have to worry about the players that we're going to have on the roster here at the University of Tennessee, because we have a staff of nationally, you know, acclaimed recruiters, and they're doing it the right way. So I just kind of put the phone down and go, oh, that's nice. That's nice to know that, because I know Georgia's doing it that way. I know Alabama's doing it that way. Clemson's doing it that way. Most schools we're competing with, Florida's doing it that way. Auburn and LSU are doing it that way. So it's nice to know that we're doing it that way too.
And you've got to have some of the flash too. And I think the thing that you're trying to find is the right balance of it, because kids that are only interested in the flash are going to, in most cases, be flameouts for you when you get them on campus.
It better work for that kid. It better work, and it better work early. You know, that's That's where I come from on this stuff. I mean, there's things in recruiting that we don't ever even touch on. I mean, the kid's background, the kid, you know, how they've been raised, what the adults are like in their life. We've seen it here time and time again, different things where, you know, we've had players who have authority problems, you know, like remember Derrick Rogers?
Yeah.
Derrick Rogers had legitimate male authority figure like issues that are things that he's probably still working through today. And the last thing Derrick needed was a coach that was going to let him get away with anything. And not, you know, someone that he needed a male figure that he respected, that he would just do what they told him to do. And he didn't have that. He didn't have that here. And hence it didn't work out for him. Like that kind of stuff you need to know going into recruiting. I remember having conversations with Trooper Taylor when he was here, and before we'd ever get to their on-field ability, you know, it'd be new guys coming in, recruits coming in from different places. Like I remember having long talks with Trooper Taylor about Denarius Moore, and I'll leave that. That's private between, you know, that's not, doesn't need to get put out there, but there was a need. He needed a little more, effort and energy from me and some other guys once he got here, because, you know, he was coming from Texas. And at the time, that was a big deal for Denarius Moore. And he really needed to feel at home. And sure enough, we did. And the kid ended up having a great freshman year and a phenomenal career period while he was here and went on to the NFL. Like, there's just things that the good ones understand what matters and that each kid is different. And to your point, Brian, you got to have both. You do. And for some, you have to have a little more of this and a little more of that. And for this kid, you got to recruit family. And for this kid, he's got a girlfriend. And, you know, and that matters. And how do you deal with that? I mean, it's a full-time job. It is literally the reason I have chosen not to get into coaching. You know, I have to do that for my own children. It's hard to do that for 25 kids a year.
You know, and a lot of people were critical of during the Butch Jones era and even the start of the Jeremy Pruitt era, when you're putting out social media graphics and you have them ready to go for all these guys that commit or they're looking for it, you have to do that too. And it's because you're doing one doesn't mean you're not doing the other. Now, some staffs are going to be better at one or the other. I don't think Nick Saban is a guy who's thinking about what graphic he wants to send a kid, but he has people on his staff that do that. And that's what I think gets lost, is people see the front-facing flash side of it, and they think, well, I don't want kids that are impressed by this, or I don't think we're focusing on the right things, when you have to realize that both are going on, and both play a role, whether they should or not, in recruiting, particularly among the top prospects.
Yeah, no, and that's why so often when we do this, I share my experience. But, you know, I remember a conversation that Philip Fulmer and my dad had that I was just kind of sitting there listening to, and it's kind of exactly what we're talking about here. I mean, it's you have to sit there and you have to balance all these different things in recruiting. Thanks for my bagel, babe. I love you. That was not to you, Brian.
Yeah, you got a bagel delivery, did you?
Yeah, I did. But anyway, it's just the recruiting is just so intricate, and there's so many different facets of it, and the good ones understand that, and Niedermeyer tweeting that. It's just nice to get the refresher of, hey, look, we're doing it the right way here at Tennessee.
656-9900, if you want to join us on the Eric Haynes Show. Coming up, Kirby Smart has reshuffled his staff, and he finally did an interview about how it's going to shake out. That's coming up on the other side. The SEC has canceled its spring meetings. Sorry about what that means coming up in a little bit as well. This is the Eric Haynes Show. Where were they going to be dangerous in the tournament this year?
Yep.
Georgia has a new offensive coordinator, Todd Monken. He replaces James Coley, who is still on the staff, by the way. James Coley came in as quarterback's coach 2 years ago, and was one of the reasons why Jim Chaney ultimately moved on and moved to Tennessee. James Coley is assistant head coach, but had been the quarterback's coach. Now Todd Monken is also going to be the quarterback's coach. So Kirby Smart could only confirm that James Coley would be on the staff as assistant head coach. During a conference call with Georgia beat reporters on Tuesday, Smart said that, quote, the plan is for Monken to handle the quarterbacks, unquote.
But you still can only have 10 coaches.
Correct. So you have Coley on staff with no firm job description, at least publicly, except he's assistant head coach.
I mean, because you're having Monken coach the quarterbacks and be the OC, you got two birds with one stone there, so the numbers still match up, but like, he's going to be a coach of something. He will have, right. I mean, you don't have, you, with 10 coaches, now maybe they value his versatility. I don't know enough about Coley to know what his value would be, but...
Two years ago, they were giving him the credit for being the guru that got freshmen and was developing Jake Fromm and was the most important cog in his development. I still dispute that. I think that's still Jim Chaney. But they gave him the quarterbacks. They gave him the OC job. And then after 1 year, they took those both away.
Yeah.
But
left
him on the staff.
That's my thing. It's just, it is a little weird because you're going, all right, you... Your narrative when Jim Chaney took the job at Tennessee was, we're fine. We were going to, we want to promote Coley anyway. Coley's the real guru. That was the response. And then they give him the job for a year. And then the very next year after that, he's no longer doing that job, but he also remains on the staff. So it's not like they don't value him. They obviously do. Maybe this guy, do we know what kind of recruiter Coley is? Because if he's just a really, really good dynamic recruiter.
I think he is a very good recruiter, yes.
If he's a very good recruiter and he has a good football mind, then I don't blame Kirby Smart for wanting to keep him on the staff. I mean, you kind of are saying, hey, if anything were to ever happen to me, this guy's already be, he's not going to coach one position. He's going to kind of, maybe you have your Kirby Smart, who's your jack of all trades on defense, and he kind of coaches all the positions on defense as he sees fit, kind of like Pruitt does here now already. You know, took Kirby a little longer to get to that role at Georgia than it took Pruitt here, but neither here nor there. Maybe Coley's just the offensive version of that. You know, maybe Coley one day is in meeting with the tight ends. I mean, there is legit value to doing this. I mean, I had a job for a few years in the NFL, and this is what I was, an overpaid GA essentially, yeah. To go in different rooms and meet with different guys and make sure different guys were, you know, up on all the quarterback thought processes and what the QBs are thinking and all that kind of stuff. I mean, Coley could. There could be a lot of value in him going in the running backs room and being able to explain why it's so important that you get your head around quick on this swing route right here, because the quarterback's going to blah, 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 blah. Like, having that guy with not one specific job is value. I mean, I kind of almost talking myself into, like, if I was a head coach, I would want that guy for defense. I would love to have a guy that could do everything on defense and could kind of bounce around, you know, because I could do that on offense. I could go into each room.
But I don't want that guy to be my coordinator. And that's where this doesn't line up. That what you're describing is what most programs are now doing with their offensive coordinator, since you have the extra assistant, or their defensive coordinator, since you have the extra assistant. And they're not having the coordinator coach a position. They're having their coordinator be the walk-around guy.
Well, the coordinator still wouldn't be the walk-around guy. The coordinator still has to call the plays and do the game plan each week. You almost, with a 10th assistant, you have, and I don't disagree that would be, if you didn't have it, like Chaney can kind of do that, but Chaney, from everything we could tell, he always kind of finds himself in the offensive line room.
Yeah,
And that may be just a personal preference by him. I don't know, but you know, I wouldn't hate it if he bounced around to the other rooms more. But we also don't know that exactly what percentage of time Chaney spends in what meeting room, etc. It's really none of our business anyway. But I don't know. I mean, I like I'm agreeing with you, Brian. This is weird. This is not normal. But I also could see why Kirby would want to do it that way, if that's really why he's doing it. If he's just a dynamic recruiter and that's why they want to keep him on the staff, then ultimately that will fade. You know, that's, you know, who knows? That ultimately doesn't. You can't keep guys just because they're good recruiters. But we all know how Pruitt values guys, and they're from the same tree, right? If you can recruit, then he'll find a spot for you to coach. And I don't necessarily love that, but I think that's, you know, in some people's cases, that keeps guys involved in college football for a long time.
656-9900 if you want to join us. 865-656-9900 or 866-656-9900. The Eric Ains Show continues. We'll talk a little bit of NFL playoff expansion next on the Eric Ains Show.
Jim going once. He's right there. I can hear him clicking around.
All right. We'll put Jim on hold, see if we can reconnect with him coming up. 656-9900 if you want to join us. The NFL yesterday, Eric, voted to expand to a 14-team playoff format. Now only the top seed in each conference will receive a first-round bye.
I'm fine with this. I like that. You know, it used to be the first two teams would receive the first-round bye. There's going to be a battle. It's going to make the regular season even more important and the end of the regular season even more important to those top few teams as there's a battle for the number one seed out of the AFC and out of the NFC because they get that first-round bye. I think that's a good thing. I think what already makes football the best professional sport, it's what makes college football the best collegiate sport, the importance every week has on your entire season is what makes it the best. You know, basketball, baseball, softball, everything else, it's regular season is important, but it's not like it is in football. So I like this. I'm good with this. I'm good with them adding the extra playoff games and it changing the dynamic of the regular season. Again, only putting more importance on being that number one seed. I can't really poke any holes in it.
This is the first expansion to the NFL playoffs since 1990. So they've gone under one format for a long time before electing to add this time. I don't dislike it at all.
I want to say in the NBA, Joel may know this off the top of his head because he knows stuff like this, but there's 30 teams in the NBA. How many of them make the playoffs?
16.
So
16-team playoff in basketball and hockey.
Okay, so there you go. You're over half your league is a playoff team. With the current system, with the system before the addition, you had 32 teams in the NFL and only 12 of them made the playoffs. So it's more impressive to be a, quote, playoff team in football. So now they're making it 14. You're still not even to that 50%. So they're still less than the other leagues.
Right.
So I think that's a good thing. I don't, you know, if they went from 12 to, I don't even know how the numbers would break down, but 18 or something like that, then you might sit there and go, oh, hold on. I mean, that's, you know, I like one of the things that makes the NFL so great is the battle for the playoffs and how you don't have, like in the NBA, there's often teams that are making the playoffs that have a sub 500 record.
Right.
You know, that's not.
It's probably not going to happen in the NFL, though. The Cowboys could have made it with a 500 record this year and just go down that rabbit hole again. 656-9900. Let's try Jim again. Jim, welcome into the EA Show.
Jim, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you now.
Yeah, what's up, Jim?
Hello.
Hey, we got you. What's on your mind?
Hello. I heard a squeaking noise, but nothing else.
All right.
Jim, you'll have to get your question to our producer off air. He wants to talk about the Vols quarterback battle, and we could give him some insight on that, Brian.
All right.
It is a battle, first off. You know, you get the questions, is it really a battle? Is it not? Yeah, I think it for sure is. I think the lack of spring practice will do nothing but ensure that you don't have a true...
It's going to make that quarterback battle isn't quite what it would have been, because Jared Garantano will still presumably be the favorite coming out of that. He will come in and say, you know, makes Sorry. It a lot harder for him to battle off, makes it harder for Harrison Bailey or for Brian Maurer or for JT Shrout to come up and take that job from him.
Yeah, it really does. And here's the thing, too. It's going to be a battle like it always has been in years past, but I believe coaches know who they feel the most comfortable with, and that's why you've seen Jarrett be the quarterback for the last 2 years. I think that when they got really frustrated with him, which everybody did, I did, when you'd watch him last year and you'd go, how can you do so good on two drives and then have that play? You know, you're just scratching your head going, it just doesn't make sense. And I think that after, you know, they've kind of figured it out halfway through the year why that was happening. They made some adjustments. He came off the bench, and he played really good football. And I think that's the game. The goal needs to be to make those same offseason growths. But now Chaney's had a year to call plays for all three of the guys that have been here before. Harrison Bailey, just like Peyton Manning, just like Casey Clawson and other guys we've had, is not going to be the quarterback day one starting out against Charlotte. It's just not going to happen. It doesn't happen. The only time that's happened is when Brent and I played, and it's because we didn't have the roster of quarterbacks like Tennessee does right now from a physical standpoint, you know, and they're all good physically. It's going to be a legit battle, though. It's not. I think it really would be irresponsible to just say, no matter what Jarrett does, he's the starting quarterback. You know, and different than last year, Brian, we've talked about it a bunch. You don't have that. You know, in the back of your mind last year, you're patient with Jarrett because you know he's got a high ceiling. You know he's an intelligent guy with a lot of ability, and he still has another year to play football. You know, if Jarrett were to have a start to the year like he did last year, I think you would see him on the bench. Because he's a senior now, and then at that point, you know, what do you have to – you got nothing to lose but to let the other guys get the reps and stuff. So Jarrett will have a lot of pressure on him, but he's had a lot of pressure on him. He showed that he is mentally tough enough to handle it last year, and I think that's where it'll go. You know, he's in a tough position because every time the kid throws an incompletion, everyone's going to be like, oh, see, he's terrible. And I don't think that's true. If that was true – then why would Jeremy Pruitt, who everyone thinks on just about every other thing with coaching, they think he knows what he's doing, why would he not know what he's doing there? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I have another question for you on the quarterbacks coming up on the other side. We'll talk about that more coming up, as well as the SEC having to move on from its scheduled spring meetings because of the coronavirus. That's next, and this is the Eric Ainge Show. Oh, we were talking about the quarterbacks before the break, thanks to a question from a caller. The other side of that is in not having spring practice. There obviously isn't a quarterback battle in the spring practice because there wasn't a spring practice. What then does it mean for a quarterback that may have been fourth on that list after that? Does Brian Maurer and or JT Shrout give it next season no matter what when one or both of them may... And I emphasize may because I don't have any information from either of their ways of thinking. But if you saw yourself as fourth on the depth chart after the spring, you would probably look to go somewhere else. Now, neither one of them has had the opportunity to see themselves as fourth on the depth chart. Does that mean that both of them stay when one of them may not have?
Well, make no bones about it. I guarantee the depth chart as we sit here today is Jarrett Garantano 1, JT Shroud and Brian Maurer in a number two role together, and it's Harrison Bailey in the fourth spot. The kid has had two practices, and I know he's a highly touted recruit, but he's never done anything. He hasn't even had a chance to do spring practice, unfortunately. So like that's I don't know if people think that like, oh, he was a highly touted recruit, therefore it's JG1 and then Harrison Bailey and then the other guy. Like that is not at all how that will be handled as of right now. That obviously when you get to training camp can change, but that's really why you wanted to have spring practice if you're Tennessee, because you really wanted to give all four of them a chance to try to, you know, slowly separate themselves, and you don't get that opportunity now. So that'll have to happen into training camp, and there's only so many reps you can give four guys. You know, this is the rough part about this, is there's only so many reps. That's why I keep saying, just so everyone has a healthy expectation of not seeing Harrison Bailey play quarterback this year early in the season, unless things go wrong, which no Vol fan should hope for. It's because without spring practice, there's just not enough reps. There's not enough time for him to get the separation that he needs to get on the field. It just is what it is, you know, and it'd be one thing if you had guys ahead of him that didn't have ability. Remember Randy Sanders yesterday, when we were talking to him, he said one thing you learned from Johnny Majors is, you got to get the talented kids experience, because you can't give the experienced kids talent. And that's true, but all of our experienced guys have talent. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's not like Brian Maurer physically doesn't possess the ability to play quarterback, or JT Shroud or Jarrett Garantano. I mean, they all can do a lot of different things. So, you know, that's the way I look at it, is you have when we start training camp, whatever that looks like, whether, you know, and whatever the summer looks like with COVID-19, we just still really don't know anything. But you have three guys that are going to be competing with each other to try to catch the other one, and there may not be a huge gap, and it may be a catchable thing. It's why you have a legitimate quarterback competition. But you got to find out who, if Jarrett Garantano gets hurt or doesn't play well, who's the first guy that goes in? Who's the second guy that goes in? Who's the third guy that goes in? You got to like get through that list, and I really don't think that any one of them will beat out Jarrett. So that being said, you're probably rolling into the season with Jarrett as your starter. But you have to have a plan for if he doesn't play well or if he gets injured. And that competition is really, really going to be important between Maurer, Shroud, and young Harrison Bailey.
If Tennessee had lost Jarrett Garantano after last year, how would you feel about where the quarterbacks sit without spring practice?
Oh, I'd feel terrible about it. I'd feel terrible about it. I mean, because you're sitting there going, you know, maybe the most talented one we have is our freshman in Harrison Bailey, but he with no ability to practice, he's not going to be anywhere near ready to play to compete with these other guys. So, you know, that's the problem you'd had with this whole thing. I think you'd had a legitimate competition with all three of them. If you'd had spring practice, it would have been hard for Harrison Bailey to beat out Maurer or Shroud going into training camp if he didn't get the spring practice. I didn't think it was realistic at all with spring practice. It's definitely not going to happen without spring practice for Harrison Bailey. The kid, in a perfect world, watches us play really good football this year, helps us continue to recruit the next class and class after that, gets a redshirt year, gets to play in a few games, throw a touchdown or two, and let the whole crowd go nuts and continue to chant that, you know, we want this guy and we can't wait till he plays. Everyone's backup quarterbacks are always the most popular guys in town. It's not going to happen this year. Harrison Bailey is only going to be the starting quarterback at the University of Tennessee if the other people in front of him do not play well or get injured.
656-9900, if you want to join us on the Eric Ainge Show. The SEC has had to cancel its spring meetings.
I know that, you know, there's people listening right now that are going, what is he? Well, I know he knows what he's talking about, but I don't agree with that, or I don't like that, or whatever. Like, don't forget, guys, Peyton Manning was not good enough as a true freshman to beat out the other guys. He had to wait until they were injured, and then he got put in. Peyton Manning couldn't do this. It's unrealistic to think that Harrison Bailey is going to do it. Is that... Tyler Bray played as a freshman when other guys got hurt. Casey Clawson played as a freshman when other guys got hurt. You know, I played. Josh Dobbs played as a freshman when other guys got hurt. I played as a freshman because there was two of us, and we just decided to do that because we didn't have the other guys on the roster that the coach wanted. That's the only time that's ever happened. And we are not currently in a situation like that where the head coach would say, we do not have the guy we want on the roster, so we're just going to go ahead and just say screw it and roll with these freshmen. That's, I'm just trying to point that out. Just remember, Peyton Manning couldn't pull it off. Why should Harrison Bailey?
I think we all need a reminder from time to time.
That's all I'm trying to throw out there.
But we all need a reminder, period, from time to time on freshmen as a whole, not just freshman quarterbacks. If your team is relying on freshmen to play major roles, your team is not in a very good spot.
No, and you better have a bunch of veterans around him. Like, you know, the best example that I could think that would be comparable to me this year was Bo Nix at Auburn. You know, Bo Nix played as a true freshman, but they knew from an early time that that was what they were going to do, and he had a bunch of veterans around him on the offense and a ton on defense, and they could kind of do that freshman thing at quarterback because of everything else around them.
Yeah, and they had him come in January, and then it was known from January on that he was going to be the guy. And that's you don't see a lot of freshmen come in and win a job. You see freshmen that come in and play as the guy that at least
out of
the
necessity,
back of the, out of the coach's head, they're bringing them in. North Carolina had the same thing this past year. Mack Brown brought in a quarterback that enrolled in January, and whether he waited till August to make the official announcement or not, that was going to be his guy, and the entire program moved forward from January on, knowing that that was going to be the guy, and that makes all the difference in the world.
I'm trying to think if there is an example of a freshman that came in when there was other really talented guys on the roster and did beat them out, because I can't think of one.
No, it's exceedingly rare.
It doesn't happen. I mean, that's just not something. And the main reason it doesn't happen is because coaches loathe the true freshman quarterback playing. That is not a situation any of them want to be in.
Yeah, because it never ends up the way that you would have hoped. We'll lead off the next hour of the Eric Ainge Show with a little over-under next. Also, Tennessee with a big in-state commitment pickup yesterday. All that and more coming up as the Eric Ainge Show continues next.